Hey, welcome to the show, Macness Podcast, episode 80. Wow.
Damn.
Yeah. this week, I got a special guest all the way from the Lone Star State. We got Lance from the Horry Returns Podcast. How you doing, brother?
Dude, man, I'm just happy to be in your presence, man. The king of San Diego Comic-Con himself. I just hope to walk in your shadow, man.
Did you listen to the new show me and Jesse did today?
every single one of them, dude. I've been following you like a slave following its leader, man. Just happy to hear all the shit you got going on, man.
Yeah, the big guys one we just did. It's only a half hour, but it was fun. So.
Oh, actually, you know what? I haven't heard that one yet.
Yeah, it just dropped today. So.
All right.
Oh man, but yes, everyone, welcome to the show. We are going to be talking about the 1971 classic, Stanley Kubrick classic, A Clockwork Orange. But before we do that, so what's been going on with you and Brian and Phil?
Man, we're just trying to get a show out every week. Sometimes it's easy, sometimes it's hard to get everybody together, you know?
Yeah. I mean, when Theo and I do the E Society, we usually do it first thing in the morning before I go to work. And sometimes we push it all the way to the last minute, and then I have to rush to work. But we've been doing pretty good putting one out every week. This month has kind of been, well, not August, last month, I've been finally just dropping show after show. So, but this one will, as soon as we're done, I'll throw it all together and put it out. But before we go further, again, just let my listeners know where, if you guys aren't already listening to the Horror Returns Podcast, I mean, I don't know what's the matter with you. You need to drop everything and go subscribe to the show. But before, and I'm sure we'll do this at the end of the show, where can my listeners hear your show?
You know where we are for sure, man. It's just it's pretty easy to find. If you're on iTunes, just subscribe, do a search for The Horror Returns, and you'll find it. But our main site is www.thehorrorreturns.podbean.com, and obviously we want everybody in the Facebook group so we can do conversations and stuff like that.
Yeah, right on. I tried to get a hold of Brian earlier because did you see the new Death Wish trailer, the remake trailer that just dropped?
That's the one with Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
I haven't been able to sit down and watch the trailer, dude. I haven't had the heart for it. what are you thinking, man?
Well, first of all, I posted something on Facebook already that there's only one Paul Kersey, and that's Charles Bronson. I mean, you can't,
that's it, man.
You can't do this, but Eli Roth is taking a stab at it, and Bruce Willis is Paul Kersey in this one. Instead of New York, they're in Chicago, and we also got Elizabeth Shue. She's in it, so I'm like, oh, okay.
What?
Yeah, she plays Bruce Willis's wife in this. So I'm like, okay. There's other than it being in Chicago. If you've seen the original Death Wish, I mean, you know that Charles Bronson is just an ordinary Joe walking down the street in his overcoat in New York, blasting fools that get in his way.
Right.
And this trailer, Bruce Willis, it kind of reminded me of he's not walking around in a raincoat like he was in Unbreakable, but he's walking around in a hoodie. Shooting fools down, and I was I'm like, okay,
I don't know, man.
I'll see it. I love Eli Roth.
I will too.
He's let me down a few times, but I'm gonna see it. I don't know with he's jumping on this remake bandwagon because Knock Knock was a remake of a Death Game. And
was it really?
Yeah, Death Game came out in 71, I believe. And then Knock Knock, I remember when that came out, I was like, oh, cool, he's got another movie. So I watched the trailer, and I was thinking, this is a remake. But, I mean, that movie was cool. I enjoyed it for what it was. But I don't know. Man, we'll see with Death Wish. I think it comes out within the next few months. I'm not sure. I didn't really look at a release date, but I don't know. I'll see it.
Yeah, I'll reserve judgment, man, until we check it out. But I'm not too excited, dude. Bronson is in Death Wish, baby.
Yep.
Nobody else. And don't you think Bruce Willis is a little too old for that role at this time?
No, I think he aged pretty well. He's not all beat up, so I don't
right.
know. We'll see. If you guys do a show on it, you got to do the original and then the remake. And if you do, I want to be on that show.
Oh yeah, for sure, man. We'll if that happens, you're on for sure.
All right.
And if you do, one, you got to invite us on, man.
Yeah, man. We'll get everybody on. Well,
Theo and everybody, right?
Yeah, I told him he needs to see it. I think he's seen the original. I'm not sure.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, I think it'd be right up his alley, man.
But our number one listener, Steve, he also listens to your show as well. He commented like, he's not happy.
But, I'm not either at this point. I'm with you, Steve.
I'll see it. I mean, we'll just wait till it comes out. But oh man, right. Before we start rambling on about something else, man, let's do this. A Clockwork Orange, 1971. When did you first see this?
The first time I saw Clockwork Orange, I must have been about. I'm trying to think, man. It was after high school, but it was just after high school. So it's at a time in my life when I was really, I guess, susceptible to checking out new stuff and getting into something I'd never seen before. And for whatever reason, it just resonated with me, man. The first time I saw it, it was just like, I don't know, man. It just felt like something I'd never seen before, you know? And then if you follow it along and keep up with the story from the beginning to the end, it's not like one of those movies that kind of dwells on the same, same subject matter. Or he's not at the same spot for the whole time. He kind of moves around. It's sort of like a development, and that's what I like about it, is that he starts out in one place, and he ends up somewhere else along the way, but then he ends up back in the same place again. And it's just one of those movies that just sort of, I don't know, it resonated with me, man. I guess I was probably like in early college years when I saw it the first time.
When I first saw this, I was pretty young. We had just gotten Showtime. It came out in 71, and I was just born. So I'd say early 80s. I remember we finally got cable and Showtime. And I remember watching something late at night, because that's usually when all the good shows came on, the shows I wasn't supposed to watch. And either if my mom and dad weren't home, if they were asleep, then I would crept into the living room and started watching all kinds of Emmanuel and stuff like that.
But, yeah, this one was X rated, so you were probably expecting a lot of action, huh?
Yeah. I remember seeing the little trailer for it on Showtime, and I was just like kind of fascinated with like, what is this? And I remember that there was a bookstore on the street corner, and mm-hmm. I remember I used to always sit in the movie section and just flip through books, and I always saw pictures of this, or even reading old Starlog magazines, because this is considered sci-fi. So I remember seeing images of it going. I just love the way Malcolm McDowell looked, Alex Delage in this.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, okay, cool. And then when I saw that it was coming on Showtime, I figured out when it was, and I got up like super, super late. It came on like 2, maybe 3 in the morning. And my mom and dad were knocked out. Our house, my mom and dad's room was way in the back of the house, so I could sit in the living room. And I could, if I sat on the couch, I can see down the hall, and if they came, I could change it. But but if I had to change it, this is in the days before there was remote controls. I had to jump up and go turn the channel on.
Actually flip the knob on the TV.
Yeah, and it was the day of there was a little black box that had the channels on it. So
okay.
So I remember sitting there watching it, fascinated with what I was seeing on the screen, and just like, oh my God, the violence, the nudity, and I just did not understand what was going on in this movie. Mm-hmm. I would say maybe I was like 10 or 11 when I seen this, And I just didn't. I was blown away with what this was, but I just did not understand what was going on, of what was making him. Well, I understood that he was just bad, and him and his buddies were running around, just causing chaos in the streets of. I believe this is in Britain somewhere.
Yeah, I think it was in London, right?
I think so. This is a
few. I know most of it was filmed in London.
It says a future Britain. That's what it says. So I was just like, oh my God. I mean, nowadays, this turned into a huge, just like a pop culture type of thing. I mean, you go anywhere, Halloween, you go to conventions, you see guys dressed in white, and you immediately, all you think of is Clockwork Orange. Lance and I, we both went to the Texas Frightmare. You guys listen to the show, you guys all know. And Malcolm McDowell was there. I took a picture of this. He was sitting there talking to fans, and there was a little kid, must have been maybe 10, 11, and he was standing there dressed up as Alex. And just the sight of that and what this movie has done, and not to blame the parents, like, why are you letting this little kid watch this? I mean, nobody let me watch it. I just kind of snuck in and watched it. But that was an awesome sight to see the youth of today that love this movie. And he was standing there talking to Malcolm McDowell about this movie. And I was like, man, but I remember Malcolm McDowell, I heard him go like, your parents let you watch this? And he looked at his dad, and his dad just like shrugged. And
all these years later, man, yeah, still such a big influence, you know?
Yeah. But I mean, this movie was amazing. And I mean, there's no way my parents would let me watch this movie. I don't think I would even let my little guy, Eric, sit down and watch this. I believe Marky, he's seen it, and he's my oldest boy. And I don't know, he's 21 now, and I don't know, I just still see my kids as little kids. But I'm pretty sure he's seen it. I never sat down and watched this with him, but he knows what the movie is. But just what it's done for film. I mean, Stanley Kubrick is an amazing director. And this is probably my second favorite movie of his, Shining being the first. And Shining,
oh wow,
Shining is a movie that you guys are doing next, right?
Yeah, we're covering that this week, actually, along with the Dark Tower and some other Stephen King related topics that we're going to discuss. But I don't know, man. The Shining, the reason I didn't like that as much when I first saw it was because I had read the book when I was probably about 11 years old. Like when it first came out, I read the book. And then when I saw the movie, it's like, what the fuck? They've changed this. They've changed that. You know, I'm like, this isn't the book that I know. And it kind of bothered me. But upon second, third, fourth, fifth, you know, 12th viewing of The Shining, I've definitely grown into a better appreciation with it. But I think with Clockwork Orange, I had never read the book, the Anthony Burgess book, until, I don't know, probably 5 years after I first saw the movie. So the movie probably had a bigger impact on me, or at least I liked it more the first time I saw it than I did The Shining, for sure.
After seeing Clockwork Orange, okay, I saw it the first time when I was a kid. I liked what I saw, but just didn't understand what was going on. Especially
a lot of imagery, right?
Yeah, especially when he went into prison, I was like, what's going on? Yeah, what's making him throw up? I had no idea it was the Ludovico treatment. I can't remember the name of the drug that they were giving him, but I just at a little young age, I couldn't comprehend that was what was making him sick, and not just the violence and everything. But later on, as a teenager, probably around the VHS days, I got a copy of it. I think it was at a yard sale or something, and I saw it, and whoever was selling it was super cheap, so I just bought it.
And how old were you then, Kevin?
I think I was in junior high, because that's about when we got a VCR. And I think that was one of the first movies that I have. I wish I still had it. I mean, I have it on DVD and Blu-ray, but I have no idea where that VHS copy is. Probably my mom probably threw it away or something. But I'm watching it, and I remember getting my friends to watch this. I was like, dude, you guys need to see this movie, because they had never even heard of it. A lot of my skateboard buddies that I hung out with, so they all came over to my house one time and watched it. A couple of my buddies said, oh, this movie's stupid. And some of my other friends...
some a, little, a little dated sometimes, huh? Like yeah. The set design and everything.
Some of my other friends are like, what is this? And some of them are blown away, but a couple of guys are like, ah, this is dumb, and didn't think it was going to be anything. And now, geez, what, 45 years later, it's still
right.
It's still big and it's still relevant. And but I was just, as I got older, I think I was junior high, yeah, and then I started to understand it. And then I must have seen it, I don't know how many times. And then I finally realized that it was a book. And I got a copy of it when I was in high school. And I read it, and I remember doing a report about it. And I had seen the movie, and I knew it from, like, front to back. And so I read this book, Anthony Burgess's novel, and then I was like, okay, I mean, this is nothing like the movie, but it kind of is. In the book, what was he, 15?
Yeah, he was a lot younger. And you know what was so crazy, dude? What was the they invented an entire language, basically, which was mostly Russian, but also like some British Cockney. Basically, they combined Russian language with some British Cockney expressions and stuff like that and created a whole new language. And in the book, they went into that quite a bit more, you know? And if you don't know what you're reading or if you haven't seen the movie, I could see how if you were reading the book, it'd be frustrating because you couldn't really keep along with what they were saying.
Yeah, I remember, I mean, the first time watching this, I mean, as a young kid, I was like, what the hell are they talking about with all this slang stuff they were using? But then as I got older watching it over and over, I kind of got, okay, I understand what they're talking about. But when I read the book, I remember when I buying it, the guy at the bookstore was like, oh man, this book's awesome. And he's like, have you seen the movie? And I'm like, yeah, I've seen it like a million times. He goes, did you understand the slang they were using? I said, kind of, sort of. And he goes, well, if you flip it to the back, there's a glossary. And I was like, oh, really? So,
okay.
As I was reading it, I was, okay, got to, Happy Polly Lodges or Pretty Polly. Pretty Polly was one. I was like, what the heck is that? When I go back and look at Pretty Polly, that stood for money. And I was like, okay. So every time I read something that I didn't understand or watching the movie, I'd go back to the glossary and figure out what they were talking about. And yeah, like you said, man, they basically made up all this slang for this movie. Anthony Burgess made it all up and Stanley Kubrick put it in the movie. But in this, I mean, it starts out just amazing. I mean, you know, even if you never heard, I mean, if you didn't know this was a Stanley Kubrick movie, immediately when this movie starts, just how he films his movies, the cinematography and the imagery and just the eeriness of every movie he's done, you know it's a Stanley Kubrick film. I mean, I love the way he shoots his films, all of them. I mean, The Shining, I'm going to go back to that really quick. How he films that when, like, just following Danny down the hall on his little big wheel and the camera's, like, on rollers. You can't even hear it. You can clearly hear the little big wheel that he's riding on, but it's just amazing on what they did and the stillness of the camera. And he'd take a long shot and never cut away. And getting his actors to do it, I mean, as well as these guys, Malcolm McDowell and the whole crew of this, getting them to just do these huge long scenes with one big shot. I think my favorite shot in this is when he's walking through the record store. I mean, I just finished watching it a little while ago, and I didn't realize that record shop is so small. It's basically like a circle. I mean, when he's walking through, you see the camera following like in front of him and he's walking towards the camera. And then when he pulls back and he finally sits there and asks the guy for I ordered this 2 weeks ago. Can you get it for me? I realized that he just went in like a circle and now he's back to the front of the store. And I was like, man, I mean, just the shots that he does with these. I mean, even in Full Metal Jacket. I mean, he did a lot of stuff with that with his camera work and everything. I just love, I think Stanley Kubrick's probably my favorite director out of all time. You got Stanley Kubrick, then you got George Lucas, early George Lucas, not the prequel stuff, but but yeah, man, I just love his style. And I mean, I don't think I would have ever read this book Anthony Burgess's novel if it wasn't for this movie, because that novel came out, what, 1962, and it's amazing. It's a totally different. It's kind of the same story, but then it's not, because we have a younger Alex. I mean, and the scene in the book when in the movie when he picks up those girls at the record store, and then mm-hmm. he takes them back home and having their three way. I mean, it's funny in the movie, because you got
with the film all sped up.
Yeah, what's that track?
That's not because most of what he likes is Bach.
Beethoven.
Right? Yeah, he's a big Beethoven fan. That's like what's that called? It's like the I can't think of what it's called, but it's I think it's like Paul Revere's Ride or something like that.
All I can think of is Lone Ranger, because that was the song
that was in the Lone Ranger.
Yeah,
it has something to do with Paul Revere, but yeah, if you listen to that and watch like the scenes where the chick starts taking her clothes off. And then he gets up off the bed from fucking the one chick, and he takes her clothes back off again. And then he puts her on the bed and fucks her. And then the other chick's putting her clothes on. And then it shows him in fast motion. He goes up there and pulls her down and pulls her back onto the bed again. it's like this dude just doesn't give up, you know?
And again, with the Kubrick's long shots, it's sped up. I mean, if you guys have seen this movie, you know, it's all sped up. And it's one shot. It's not broken up. I mean, there's no different angles. It's just one angle. And
Right. Who
knows how long that scene is. I mean, it probably went who knows how long, but it sped up super fast. And they were actually doing what you're seeing on the screen, rolling around in the bed naked and going back and forth. I was like, oh, my God. As a little kid watching this going, whoa, what's going on? But I mean, I love this. I mean, the first opening scene when Alex is sitting there, it kicks right in. And the music that's in this, I mean, you just see his face of looking down. I've noticed that Stanley Kubrick does a lot of, has his main characters like giving that evil grin on their eyes. He did it in this. He did it in The Shining. He also did it with Pyle in Full Metal Jacket.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, oh my God. I mean, the camera just pulls back and you start hearing the Alex, he's narrating basically the whole movie, and he's just talking about him and his buddies hanging out in the
hell? Cordova Milk Bar.
Yeah. Is that real? Or that's what I didn't understand. I mean, I'm not a milk drinker, so
you know, to be honest with you, I think that it's like in the future, and they basically put like he said scent the mask. But I think basically they were like drinking milk that had either mescaline or some kind of meth in it. So I think it got them where they were tripping, but they were also like super super revved up, you know. So whatever drugs were in that milk they were drinking made them really really want to go out and commit the violence and stuff, kind of like a meth head. But I think it also made them trip a little bit.
Yeah, because I'm looking at Wikipedia and it says one night after getting intoxicated on drug-laden milk plus, they engage in an evening of ultraviolence. That's what I love. I mean, he basically says that right in the beginning. He goes, "This helps us get into the ultraviolence."
Yeah, I think that's kind of what that was their gig every night, man. Just get totally fucked up and then go fuck people up, you know.
But that bar, I mean, it was crazy. The tables is basically ladies leaning backwards on all right. fours, and just crazy. And what was with the bouncers in those skin tight white body suits?
And they were just kind of standing there with their arms folded, just waiting for something to happen, you know?
Yeah, I mean, or even the actual milk dispensers is like naked ladies, and you put money in and you squeeze the lever under it.
Squeeze the and then tweak the nipple.
Yeah,
and that's where the milk comes out.
It was crazy, but they get all juiced up, and this scene is awesome. Right after that, when they take out the bum that's in sitting there,
man,
singing, and just I've done crazy stuff with my friends, but never did we ever just go beat up some old homeless guy.
Go fuck up a bum, huh?
Yeah, for the hell of it. I was just like, man. I mean, that's what I liked, about this. The violence in this, especially, I mean, when they're beating up this old man, it looks like they were actually really hitting him. Maybe
it really did, man. And he's over here saying, can you spare some quarter for an old gentleman, you know? And they're like, ah, what's this? And then you could hear him talking in the background. There's nothing I hate more than seeing an old drunkie whistling booby dooby doo like he's got a horn or something. You know, it's like so much contempt, man, just for this poor old dude, man. And then they just start beating the fuck out of him, you know? And he's like, that's the problem with the world today. There's no law and order anymore. So you get a feeling that it's a really fucked up future world where nobody's even really watching these kids anymore. And they do whatever the fuck they want.
Because after they just all just beat him to hell with sticks and a chain, we go to a scene where Alec or Billy Goat or Billy Boy, him and his crew are about to... perform a little of the old in-out on some young Dvochka. And I was like, whoa, what is going on here? I mean, especially Stanley Kubrick, man. You watch his films, man. He's got a lot of X-rated imagery in his films. And what makes these scenes, though, I mean, rape isn't good, but the music and the background, the nice orchestra music, and you get this crazy imagery on the screen. I'm like, oh my god. But I mean, this was cool, because right after that, I mean, Alex is basically calling out Billy Boy and his crew, and they have this big huge brawl. And another thing here, man, it looks like they did all their own stunts of them jumping around, throwing guys and crashing through the glasses and beating people up. And I mean, the stunts that they did in this, It didn't look like they were pulling back. I mean, especially when Alex is just whacking away on one of I assume it's Billy Boy with his cane, and it looks like he's actually hitting him. Or especially Dim when he's hitting some dude with a chain. I mean, I'm like, man. I mean, they either those guys had really thick coats on or some kind of protection under them. Oh man, it was a brutal scene. All the violence in this was pretty brutal. I mean, maybe not to today's standards, but for 1971, I mean, it was just brutal. But it was an awesome scene. I just loved what was going on. Not so much the rape part, but once they started fighting, I thought that was pretty sweet.
Well, you know, I don't think that Kubrick has ever made a single shot that he's put on film that hasn't been 100% intentional. I really think he probably went. You know what? From what I read about Kubrick, the more I read, especially about some of the stuff he did on The Shining, how long it took to film that, I wouldn't be surprised, Kevin, if they took, you know, a month's worth of shots to get this just right, the way he wanted it. So there may have been some scenes where they weren't quite into it, and Kubrick probably said, "No, motherfucker, hit him. Hit him hard. Hit him hard. Throw that chain down there. Come on, hit him. Make it look real." And they probably ended up with a lot of bruises, dude. Because Kubrick is not the one-shot wonder. One thing about Kubrick, dude, from what I read about him, he will keep fucking with you for a month until you get the shot just right. And he is not afraid to take a long time to film a movie. So what you're saying, man, is definitely a testament to how he did that. And by the time they got done filming this, the fight scenes, the reason it looks so real is because he made them keep fucking filming it until he got just the right shot.
Because yes, I mean, even with that, because the scenes when they go to they're going back out and they're just they're in a car. I mean, this scene is actually funny.
I love that, dude. I love that shit when they were playing Hogs of the Road.
Yeah, when they're just racing down the street in the Durango 96 or whatever that car was called.
Right.
I mean, it's totally just a car sitting still and they're in front of a screen, but it just looks amazing. You got Alex and his boys just can barely fit in this little two-seater, and they're all just hooting and hollering and screaming. Like you said, Hogs of the Road, mobbing down this this road in the middle of the night, running people off the road. But when they get to the house of that writer, I can't remember his name, but they basically just make up this thing like, hey, there's been an accident. Can you let us in, use a phone? And the lady goes, right. All right. So she opens up the door and they all just charge in.
Yeah, the wife.
And this scene was, I mean, it's still an eerie scene to watch of them just going there and beating up the guy and beating up his wife as well, tying them both up and taping.
They put a rubber ball in each of their mouths and then twisted the tape around where they couldn't yell or scream or anything.
Yeah, I mean,
and then fucking tied him down so he's totally helpless, and they forced him to watch them all rape the wife.
Yeah, I mean, the scene, the realism of this scene, when Dim has, they have the wife kind of just not really tied up, but Dim is holding her over his shoulder. Alex puts the ball in her mouth and wraps her head with tape. But when he slaps her, he really slaps her. It was,
yeah, that's rough, dude. It's not faked at all.
No, I mean, you could see, man, her head moving when her hair hits. I mean, nowadays, mm-hmm. usually a lot of people, they pull their punches. But no, she really got slapped. And when he was kicking the old man that was laying on the floor, I mean, you can hear it. I mean, it wasn't just an added sound effect. You can really see that he was kicking him. And I was just, man, I mean, this scene, and another thing, they're all laughing and hooting and hollering, and he's singing in the rain. And then it just turns, just not expecting. I had no idea where it was going to go watching this the first time, but then he just, and basically just cuts off her clothes and kneels down to the guy and says, "Vidi well, little brother, vidi well." And then I'm kind of glad I'm kind of glad they didn't show it. But then he starts to rape this lady, and I'm like, oh my god! I mean, it was such a brutal thing. And then in the scene after that, they go to back to the bar, or to the milk bar, and it's
back for more of the Syntha mask.
And it's like they don't care. Like they just did this horrific act and don't really care. Have a care in the world. They all just look like they're tired and they're ready to go home. And I was like, oh my god. I mean, it's just, this movie's nuts. I mean, and it's still crazy. But the futuristic stuff in this, it was supposed to be in the future, and it's just you see Alex walking along, going back to his apartment, and it's just I don't know. I hope the future isn't like this, but there's just garbage everywhere. And he's just walking along whistling. And again, back to the long shots of Stanley Kubrick, just the one shots of him walking into his apartment building, and just the graffiti on the walls. I mean, Stanley Kubrick's, I mean, his movies have a lot of just sex imagery. I mean, because there's these stuff on the wall. I think it's back in the Alexander the Great days, but these images on the wall of like Greek, I don't know if they're gods or anything, but they're there. But then the graffiti of guys drawing dicks coming out of their the little cloth things that they're wearing, and even inside, it looks like the house is, or the apartment building is just full of junk. I mean, there's trash in the corner, there's stuff all over the place, the elevator looks all beat up and it doesn't work. I don't want the future to be like that, to where there's trash everywhere.
It's like a fucked up future, you know?
Yeah,
it's kind of like the way we're headed if we don't watch out, you know?
Yeah, and then he basically just goes into his house and just kind of relaxes, like everything they did that night didn't happen, and
he just had a bit of a pain in the gulliver and had to stay home. no school today, Mom.
Yeah, I mean, even that, his parents were like, they were hard workers and everything, and he was still just doing what he does. Didn't go to school, run around all night. I mean, he even had that character, Mr. Deltoid. I don't know if it was his probation officer or anything, but he's trying to tell them. They're keeping an eye on him because
I couldn't figure out if Mr. Deltoid was his probation officer or more like his principal, like school principal or something like that. Like, you know, why aren't you in school, young Alex? You know, but you know what I did notice in this scene, though, Kevin, which kind of started me wondering if he's such an evil dude after all, is that he did have those moments, man, where he would listen to Ludwig von, and he had his pet snake, and he would just chill out in his room. And it's like he didn't want to bother anybody. He didn't want to fuck with anybody. It's just kind of like he got wrapped up in being a product of the times that he lived in. It's like all this violence was going on because the world is so fucked up. But when you get him home to his room and he just relaxes and listens to his music, he doesn't really want to hurt anybody, you know? And that's where I kind of started feeling for him a little bit. I'm thinking, maybe he's not such an evil guy after all.
Yeah, I mean, because, yeah, like, I understand he's just sitting there relaxing and everything. But when he starts listening to his Ludwig van, he's got these – they show these crazy images because he's sitting there talking, and he said, when I'm listening to Beethoven – I start to see these eerie images, and there's an image really quick of a lady being hung, and a scene of I think it was from 10,000 BC, the movie where rocks are falling on the cavemen, and you see war, and he's really quick images of him like a vampire because he's got fangs and blood coming out of his mouth, and I mean just the crazy things that were going on in his head. This kid is totally, I mean, he's disturbed, but he. I think he can keep it under control. It only comes out when he needs to. And then after that when we get Mr. Deltoy just kind of laying down the law, like, look, if you mess up and you're going to jail. But Alex don't listen. Then we get to the scene where with the girls and all that, and we already talked about that, but Alex goes down to in the book. Well, let me go back a little bit. In the book, after the little threesome that he has, he basically beat them up and then kicked them out of his house when he was done. None of that is in the movie. That was all in the book. And I was just like, man, I mean, they just gave you a good time, and then you ended up just beating them up and throwing them out of your house.
What an asshole, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I was just like, oh, okay. I mean, yeah, when I was reading the book, man, I was just picturing Malcolm McDowell and those guys in the story. But when it came to all these different scenes that weren't in the movie, it was like, oh, wow. I mean, it was. I think the book was way more brutal than the movie. And mm-hmm. And then when Alex, I mean, he's the lead. He's the Drugan leader, and he just mm-hmm. his crew isn't having it anymore. They kind of was like a little an uproar against him, and he basically
they tried to have an uprising.
Yeah, they had to said he had to set them straight and let them know that I'm the boss, and don't you guys ever try to cross me, because that scene where he just beats them up and then. Slices Dim's hand with it. I thought that cane he had was sweet. It had the little the hidden knife in it.
Yeah, the little knife in it, and then he threw him in the water.
Yeah, he like threw him all. No, Georgie fell in the water, and he sliced Dim. Pete, he just kind of backed up and didn't want no part of it.
Right. Yeah, he gave up quick, didn't he?
Yeah, but he broke it down to him, because after that they were sitting in that bar, and he just told him straight up, "Look, I'm the boss, and don't ever try to cross me again." But that's when they came up with that plan to go to this health farm that was way out in the middle of nowhere. And they were basically just going to rob it. And there was this older, she looked like she was doing yoga or something, this cat lady. And they break in. they tried to do the same old, there's been an accident, but she wasn't having it. And she actually.
Yeah, she'd already heard the news stories. She knew that sounded familiar to something she heard last week.
Yeah, because then she had called the cops and. So they were basically, the cops were on their way, because who knows where this house was. They were way out in the countryside. And then
right.
Alex ends up breaking in and then has this little altercation with her and ends up killing the lady with this big, huge piece of art. That's what she called it. But it was basically a big dick with balls.
Yeah, like a ceramic cock with balls, right?
Yeah, and just like basically smashes her head in or her face in. And then he ends up leaving. And then as he's running out of the house, Dim slams him across the face with a milk bottle.
Back to the Cordova milk bar, huh?
And they all just basically laugh and leave him there. You can hear the police coming.
But there was something else in that bottle. I guess it was the drugs or something. Because remember when he hit him in the face, he blinded him.
Yeah.
There for a little bit, he like hunkered down and he was like, I can't see a fucking thing. I can't see anything. So there must have been some strong drugs or chemicals in that milk, you know?
Because, yeah, man, that was pretty harsh hit to the face. And then he just goes down. And then next thing you know, he gets arrested. And they just basically, look, man, the lady died. Your ass out and you're going to jail.
Yeah, you're fucked.
Yeah, so I assume in this one he must have at least been 18 because they send him off to prison. And then he basically gets 14 years in this prison. And he's just like, all right, whatever. I mean, they tried to at first he was trying to, like, when they were interrogating him, he was kind of like, ah, you guys can't do nothing to me.
Yeah, but he was being a hard ass at first. Yeah,
but then when Mr. Deltoid tells him, nope, sorry, that lady died. So, your ass out and you're going to prison. So, and then he just I don't know how many years he did in prison before. I think he did like a couple of years before.
Just a couple of years. Cause I remember he was 1 year in when he started, hanging out with the pastor, you know, and he started pretending to be really into the Word of God and reading the good book and all that. Cause he figured this might be my ticket out of here. You know, if I can make good with the pastor and pretend like I'm really believing in the Word of God and reading everything. But then again, you saw the parts where he said, I particularly like the stories about Jesus being crucified because I would pretend like I was one of the Romans whipping him savagely and fucking putting nails into his hand and making him stand on the cross. And,
yeah,
you know, there goes what you were talking about earlier with him being such an evil motherfucker, you know?
Yeah, he's reading the good book, but then he's picturing himself doing all the bad things. And that, I mean, that's the kind of messed up kid he was. But he was playing the role. He wanted to get out of prison. But then that's when he had read about this new treatment.
And, Ludovico technique.
Yeah, and then I remember when the scientist came, I think it was the minister of something, he came. And then he basically volunteered himself to do it. And they were like, okay, well, this is the guy we want because he's young. He's young and vicious. So because they basically told him he's a murderer. He tried to say, well, because the minister guy asked him, well, what are you in for? He said the accidental death of a person. And then the one hard ass prison guard is like, nope, he murdered. He's a brutal killer. He murdered this lady in cold blood.
Right.
So,
yeah, when the minister was walking up and down the line talking to all of them, he had them all lined up on both sides, kind of like you see in a military movie. And he was saying, you guys are a bunch of you're nothing but garbage. Every single one of you is not worth a shit. Every single one of you is fucking deserves to be here and you deserve to die. And then that's when Malcolm McDowell's Alex's characters stepped up and said, you're absolutely right, sir. And then his leader said, you shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up until you're spoken to. And then the minister says, whoa, hold on. What did you say, young man? I said, you're absolutely right, sir. Every single one of us doesn't deserve to be here. We are absolutely cold-blooded killers. And then that's when he asked him what crime you committed. And so that's where he kind of made himself stand up. So he was really going out of his way to be recognized and to get a chance to do this technique and get the fuck out of prison quick. Because I think in his mind, Kevin, he was thinking, I'll go through this. I'll pretend like I'm doing the technique. They'll let me out like in a couple of weeks, and then I go do my ultraviolence again.
Because actually, yeah, when they got him and they took him and said, all right, this is the guy we need, and they end up taking him to this other medical facility. I think he was only in there for maybe a month, if that. I think less than a month.
Yeah, it was a short time, man.
Yeah,
it was a short time.
Because he was all ready for it, and they started drugging him up like Bitsy, like right when he got there. They put in that, I can't remember the name of the drug that they, because the camera zooms in on it.
I remember he asked the lady, what are you giving me, vitamins then? And she said, yes, just some vitamins. Make you feel better.
Because then he's asking him, like, well, what are you guys going to do? What I have to do? She goes, oh, we're just going to let you watch some films. And he's like, oh, like going to the pictures. And he's like, yeah.
Yeah, so, that's like nothing.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is one of the classic scenes. You get there and they basically throw a straitjacket on him and have him, his head, with like a brace around it, and to where he can't even turn his head. And they put those like eye clamps on his eyeballs to keep him open so he can't blink or much less turn his head. And then they just start showing him just violent things of girls getting raped and people getting beat up, and and all that. And then while he's watching this, he's like, he's narrating like, yeah, I'm enjoying this. But then all of a sudden he starts to get sick.
And, yeah. And then all of a sudden I started to feel very ill. And they've got a guy there with eye drops, putting eye drops in his eyes so they don't dry out, so they can just keep them open the whole time.
Yeah, Malcolm McDowell was watching like the extras, and Malcolm McDowell said that really that messed him up, because them prying his eyes open and putting the eye drops in his eyes, because he said when they were done filming that, he said he didn't feel right. I guess after having his eyeballs open and other than his eyelids being sore. But he was saying it was pretty brutal, but they got the shot. And I remember after his first treatment, he was sitting there like, this is horrible. It was horrible. And he goes, right. I don't know what's happening to me. And he's like, because when he does it or sees it, he said he enjoyed it. But now he's like, he doesn't understand why he's getting sick. And they basically told him, well, you're getting better. That's why we're showing you that violence is wrong. So, and then after that, they gave him there was 4 sessions a day for, I think, like 2 weeks he did this. And it was just wearing him out to where he was just screaming and didn't even want to watch this stuff anymore. They started showing him the World War II stuff with the Nazis and what Hitler did to the Jewish people and all this. And it was nuts, all the stuff that they were showing him on the screen. And he basically started to yell at that last scene of him being tied up that I understand. I get it. Violence is wrong.
Yeah, it's a sin. And he says, young man, what's this all about, sin? And he said, it's a sin. It's a sin to do such violence. Well, then you're getting better. And then he said, well, okay, I'm done. I'm cured. Take me off. No, no. You must trust us. 2 more sessions a day.
Yeah.
But fucking brutal, man.
He deserved all this, or what they were doing. In actuality, I think he probably would have felt this way anyway, got sick regardless. But I think it was trying to trick his brain that if you see this, you're gonna get sick. I mean, and that was the bottom line of what they were doing. That it was the drug that was making him sick, but giving him all these images. When the drug kicked in and made him sick, he just realizes what he's seeing on the screen, all this violence, and it was tricking his brain to like, okay, when you see violence, you're gonna be sick. So that's what was happening to him. And then when they finally let him out, I mean the crazy stuff that happened. He was in this room with the like an audience, and they bring in this guy that just basically just slaps him in the face and kicks him to the ground.
Actually, it started off kind of slow. The guy's like, hello there, friend. And he's like, hello, friend. And then the guy's like, I don't like you very much. And he's like, what do you mean, good sir? You don't like me very much. What's the problem? And then the guy just slapped him. And he's like, why did you slap me, sir? And the guy says, fuck you. I want to do whatever I want to you. And he throws him down on the ground. He says, what are you going to do about it, you motherfucker? And then he's down there on the ground. He's like, please, sir, please. And he's starting to get sick because he doesn't want to commit the violence. And then what happens, Kevin, when they bring in the good-looking chick that takes her clothes off?
Oh, no, she comes walking in. She only has her underwear on. She's topless.
Yeah, she's kind of sauteing in, right?
And yeah, she just walks in and basically just stands in front of him. And then he tries to touch her, and then he just starts to feel sick.
That's terrible.
So they're making him, look, every time you see violence or get into some altercation, or much less if you start thinking about sex, you're going to get sick because of that.
Wow. Yeah, they really fucked with him, didn't they?
Yeah, that was what happened. But then they basically, after all that, he was like, told him, yeah, you're cured, so we're going to let you go. And they let him out of prison.
Off into the world he goes, huh?
Yeah, I mean, they show newspaper clippings of a brutal murderer gets out of prison because of the new treatment. And then he tries to go home, but years have
passed. Well, the good thing is, though, he went back home, and his mommy and daddy welcomed him with open arms, right?
Yeah, but they had a lodger, is what they called him. Alex is basically like, hey, Dad, who's this guy sitting there munching on ticks of toast? and he's like, oh, he's our lodger. And he's like, well, we needed the money, and your room was empty.
Yeah, because basically the state came and took all their money away for restitution for the crimes Alex committed. So they got totally fucked up, man. All the money that Alex had saved away, the state came in and took it as restitution for his victims.
Yeah, I mean, because when his room earlier, when they showed it, he opens up this drawer under his bed, and it's like full of money and watches and all kinds of other goodies.
Everything he'd stolen from people.
Yeah, so, but his mom and dad basically tell him, like, look, you can't stay here. And then he's about to get into it with this dude that still stole his room. And then he also finds out that his snake died, and then pulls up a fist and then immediately starts to get sick.
Feel sick.
And the dude that's in the house with him, his mom's sitting there crying, and he's basically dry heaving, and he's like, come on. She goes, why don't you just shut your mouth? You're about to make us sick. And then Alex is just like, all right, well, I'm out of here. So he ends up leaving, and he's just kind of walking along the riverbank, and bum guy comes up and starts asking him, can you spare some cuts on me, brother? And he gives him some money, but then he just doesn't realize what's going on. But then this old hermit hobo realizes that this is the guy that beat me up. And then
I recognize you, brother.
Yeah. He's like, he tries to run away, and then that old guy is holding on to him. This is the guy.
Yep.
Him and his friends tried to do me in, and then like every
bum in the city shows up.
Yeah, and they all just start pounding on him. And I think this is probably one of my favorite scenes. As they're all beating up on him, these two cops come up, and they go, all right, that'll be enough.
To make it even worse.
Yeah. He goes, what's going on here? And then Alex like looks up and goes, oh no. And then the music just and then they show Dim looking down, and then he's like, well,
the shoe's on the other foot then, mate.
Yeah. If it isn't little Alex. Long time no vidi, Droog, how goes? And then he's like, oh, how, what? And he goes, and Georgie, it's him and Dim and Georgie. And then he goes, yeah. And he goes, now two guys were able to get jobs as the cops.
He said, we're of job age and we got jobs.
Yeah. What better job than the police? And they ended up hauling him away. And they take him out in the middle of nowhere and just start beating the hell out of him.
And they're drowning him.
Yeah.
I guess, what is that, like something that horses drink water out of or something like that?
Yeah, like some kind of like water thing.
Like a water trough or something like that.
Yeah.
And they just fucking put his head under there. I thought he died for a minute. I really did. When I was rewatching it, I thought, man, they had his head under there so long. How is he still alive?
I mean, this scene right here is such a long shot, man. He held his breath for a long time to be under that water. And
yeah, super brutal, man.
While he's doing this, Dim is whacking him with George.
Yeah, hitting him with a stick, man.
Yeah,
both of them were
with the billy club, and he was underwater for a long time.
A very long time.
And then when it kind of cuts away is when they finally kind of pull him out of the water. I mean, it was, I'll give it to Malcolm McDowell. I mean, there was something I wanted to ask him, and that's why I wanted to ask him, dude, how long were you underwater? But I mean, that scene, and then they basically just leave him there, and he's all beat up, and then he kind of just staggers off into the night and ends up back at the house where him and his buddies broke in and raped that lady. But he has no idea where he's at. And this
the same. He stumbled to the same house, man, and it had a big sign in front that said home.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that Kubrick put that there for a meaning. You know, if you think about it, man, when they first showed up and fucked everybody up, the big not a neon sign, but a huge lighted sign said home. And then he stumbles back to here. Did he stumble purposefully because it said home, you think, Kevin? Or
no.
You think that was just a coincidence?
It was just a coincidence because he's when he's narrating, he goes, he had no idea where he was. And then he goes knocking.
He was just fucked up.
Yeah, he goes knocking on the door. And then we get Darth Vader, Dave Prowse. Sitting there when they hear the doorbell ring. And he gets up and goes and checks. And when he opens the door, he just comes falling in, and then I can't remember what his name was. All I picture is Dave Prowse, and he's a big old bodybuilder. Darth Vader picks him up and brings him in. And
you know what it made me think of when he was carrying him?
Huh.
Like Rocky in the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Oh.
You remember? He said, "In just 7 days, I can make you a man." That's what I was thinking of, dude. Just this, and it was kind of weird, but, dude, I kind of got, did you get the weird feeling that even though he had a wife earlier, he was kind of gay or something? That he had that big bodyguard in there with him, like a big, sexy muscle guy?
Well, he needed him because he was in a wheelchair because he got beat up so bad he was crippled. He wasn't able to walk.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I just had some weird homosexual ideas there. That what the fuck is this guy, big guy, doing in there with, you know?
In the 70s, man. I mean, I remember watching something and Dave Prowse was talking about this movie and everything and how in shape he was. I mean, this was all pre Star Wars. So Prowse, he played a character named Julian, and it says Mr. Alexander's bodyguard. So he basically brings him in.
All right.
And Mr. Alexander, he looks at him.
Well, that was kind of pre steroids too, you know. So yeah, for them to get that big, they had to really do a lot of working out, not just shoot themselves up with the drugs, you know.
Yeah, but when he sees him, he basically, he knows that this is the guy that got let out of the prison, and he knows that this is the guy that raped and murdered my wife. And but
do you think he knew it right away, or do you think it took him a little while being there before he recognized it?
No, he knew right away.
Yeah, he had that look. He had that look in his eyes, didn't he?
He had that evil look, and he basically, "I know you." But then Alex was kind of like, "Uh oh." By this time, he realized where he was, and then he was like, "But he goes, oh, everything's all right because I had my maskie on." And then he's basically telling him, "I know who you are," and he goes, "Oh, you're the dude that had to go through that evil torture with that Ludovico treatment," and he's like, "Yeah, that's me."
He knew the whole time.
Yeah, because it was all because he had mentioned he had telling him. All right. He goes, "You're the guy in the papers." And he's like, "Yeah, that's me. They did dreadful things to me." And he goes, I want you to talk to these reporters and tell them your story, but let's clean you up first." So,
right. But they had an agenda too. They were on the other political spectrum from the people who did the technique.
Yeah, they were. There's always going to be someone that doesn't like what you do, and Mr. Alexander seemed to be like he was a part of that crew that didn't think that they needed to put him through this thing. I mean, basically, he didn't want him. He didn't want Alex to get out of prison. He wanted him to stay in there and rot. But
well, let me ask you this, Kevin. On kind of a side note, when you saw him in his wheelchair, did he remind you a little bit of Theo in Breaking Bad a little bit with the bell that he would ring and everything?
Oh, Hector something.
Yeah, exactly. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Didn't he give you that vibe a little bit?
Now that you
after having seen Breaking Bad.
Now that you mentioned that, yeah.
I'm just kind of wondering if Breaking Bad wasn't inspired a little bit from this scene.
I don't know. Probably.
Yeah, because it's the same thing, dude. He's like held. He's held captive by this dude in a wheelchair that should be helpless. But he's got these people around him helping him that can really fuck you up, you know? I don't know. I just kind of get that feeling from it watching it this time, you know?
The scene after when they tell him, just, "We'll clean you up before these people come." Alex is in the bathroom and he's sitting there in the tub getting cleaned up, and he starts singing in the rain.
Singing in the rain, yeah.
And Mr. Alexander is outside the doorway, like, just having, looks like a major panic attack, because that, I mean, this shot is, it's like the camera was below him and he's like leaning forward with his mouth wide open, look like he's getting ready to have a heart attack. I mean, I'm sure
he's totally feeling it at that point, right?
Yeah, like, oh man, this any second, man, he could probably just bust in there and kill him. But we get back after Alex is done, he comes sitting there and he starts eating dinner and everything, and these people come over, and Mr. Alexander is basically telling him, because Alex is like, "Well, are you married?" And he said he was, but his wife's dead. And then he's like, Alex is like, he kind of realized something's going on, because you got Mr. Alexander sitting there grilling him about stuff, and you got Darth Vader sitting next to him, just like looking at him. And everybody knows who Alex is. So he lets these people come over and they start questioning him. But then we realize Alex, in the middle of a sentence, just does a face dive into his spaghetti. And then he thought they drugged the wine. I think they drugged the food. So
yeah, something was drugged for sure.
Because he just gets knocked out, and then when
he was out, dude.
When Alex wakes up, he starts listening. They're blasting Beethoven, and
to really fuck with him.
Yeah, I mean, and the reason Beethoven would mess with him and make him all sick is because, when they were showing him, when he was in the medical center, when they were showing him all this imagery stuff and everything, they were playing Beethoven in the background. So him hearing that, and his brain triggers to get sick, and he's just like screaming, pounding on the floor, stop the music. And Mr. Alexander and everyone's downstairs just like kind of like just sitting there waiting and listening to him. Mr. Alexander's sitting there just like basically ready to come in his pants because he's so happy. And,
right.
Alex just he's narrating, talking about it, and he goes, he couldn't take it anymore, and the only way to end it is to basically kill himself. So he does a swan dive out of the second floor window.
Out of the window.
Yeah. And Alex just he thought he was dead, but he ends up waking up in the hospital. And then he's just like, all right, whatever. And then he's pretty beat up. He's like in a body cast. And then,
he's pretty much meat at that point, you know?
Yeah, this young, it was a nice, I don't know, she was a psychiatrist or a doctor or something. She comes in and starts wanting to do some little tests with him.
Yeah, asking him questions and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, some stuff that would usually, like, kind of maybe make him sick. She was just showing him pictures, and she goes, just tell me whatever comes to your mind, and he starts just saying some crazy things. Like, there was a picture of there was some guy coming through the window, and there's a naked lady in the bed, and she goes, well, what do you think? He goes, no time for the old in out love, I'm just here to check the meter. Right. And there was a picture of someone's eggs, and he's like, eggy wakes,
I'd like to splash him.
Yeah. And then they just kind of realize that I'm not sure if the medical staff knew. I mean, they knew who he was, but I didn't understand if they knew what had happened to him, because when the minister comes in and was the head of the Ludovico technique, he's basically telling him, like, look, you need to tell the press that you're fine, everything's good, and don't sell us out, because if you sell us out, we're going to jail. And if we go to jail, you're going too.
I mean, at that point, they were like, the damage has been done, you know?
Yeah. So, and then they just hit, hey, man, just let them know that we're all good, and there's no hard feelings. And
Alex, and you're out of jail, so it's all good.
Yeah. And Alex is like, all right, cool. And then basically the drug that they were giving him wore off. So, I mean, he can start thinking all the crazy thoughts and doing the craziness that he was doing. And he
could be himself again.
Yeah, like you said, man, went full circle. Now he's back to normal, because at the very last thing he says, I was cured.
I was cured, all right.
Yeah, and then the movie's over. And then you got, I can't remember what song. I think it was Singing in the Rain during the credits rolling. But this movie is just totally off the wall, but it's a classic movie, and I love it. When you met Malcolm McDowell when we were at Texas Frightmare, what did you guys talk about?
I just kind of I kind of told him how much I, to be honest with you, dude, I couldn't say a word. I was dumbstruck. I was like in the presence of one of my heroes, but. I got the autograph, and I got a good picture and everything, and I was just like, man, I love Clockwork Orange. I said, will you give us a soundbite for The Horror Returns? And then his fucking agent creeped up on us and said, no media. He's like, dude, he was just about to give us a soundbite, man. But no, it was cool meeting him, dude. It was like a hero that I've had forever. But what did I ask him? I did not have any words in my vocabulary, Kevin. When I came in contact with this guy, man, Malcolm McDowell, I was like, you've been in fucking at least 100 movies that I've seen and loved. And one of them, which I consider my favorite film of all time, what can I say to a guy like that, you know? It was like pure hero worship.
I didn't get to talk to him at this convention. I met him in San Diego one year at Comic-Con. And I think if you were at that one, he was just sitting there by himself. He probably would have did your soundbite without even hesitating. Because he was just sitting there and on his phone, and nobody was at his table. And I'm like, I have to meet him. So
You're kidding.
I walked up to him and just basically kissed his ass and told him how much I love Clockwork Orange and that other movie, Time After Time, that he had
done. Oh, yeah. Hell yeah. Yep, absolutely, man.
And we were sitting there talking about that, and I maybe talked to him for just a few minutes, man. But
that was the one where he was hunting down David Warner, right? Yeah. David Warner was Jack the Ripper.
Yeah,
and he was H.G. Wells in that movie, right?
Yeah, I mean, I love that movie. Other than they shot it in the Bay Area, but it was cool.
It's a beautiful movie, dude. I love Time After Time. Yeah. One of my favorite of all time.
So, but it was cool to sit there and talk to him. I mean, this is all before I did all the podcasting stuff, but I mean, it was cool to sit there and just talk to him about stuff that stuff that I enjoyed that he has done. And he was a really super cool guy. I mean, this time I didn't even attempt to go up and talk to him, other than the people that were sitting there with him, his handlers, and he always had a long line. So I just kind of took pictures from afar. Of every time I pass by. But Stanley Kubrick, man, I mean, he's one of the greats. And he passed away, geez.
It's been a while, dude. Yeah. At least 5 years, right?
I think more than that. He passed in 99.
So, wow. Yeah. That long ago?
Yeah. But I mean, just the movies that he's left us with. I mean, like I said, this The Shining being my favorite that Stanley Kubrick did. But it was just what he did. It was amazing. And this, I mean, Clockwork Orange. I mean, it's a master in my eyes, and I'm sure to a lot of other people, this is a masterpiece. It's kind of like the book and kind of not, but it's still good.
Right.
I mean, a lot of people didn't like his very last movie, Eyes Wide Shut.
Eyes Wide Shut was fine, dude. The first time I saw it, I was kind of like, eh, I don't know about this, you know?
Yeah, that's
how. But second, third, fourth time I saw it, I'm like, this is a fucking masterpiece, just like anything Kubrick's done.
Yeah.
And like you said, dude, Full Metal Jacket, holy fucking shit. Especially the first half of that movie where they're in training camp. And R. Lee Ermey played the sergeant. That was such a fucking fantastic movie, dude. It was just right on point. That it made you feel like you were training to be in the Vietnam War. It really did.
Yeah, I mean, that movie was amazing what he did in it. And just, or even in 2001, A Space Odyssey. Jeez, that came out.
Oh, yes, absolutely, man.
That came out in 68. That movie,
yeah, and if that hadn't come out, we would not have Star Wars. We would not have Star Trek. There's a lot of stuff that movie totally, completely started the ball rolling for, man.
I love that movie, but to this day, I still don't get what the monolith is. Do you know?
Yeah, I kind of do, man. I kind of think it was just something the aliens planted here. That they put on this planet, and they put on a whole bunch of different planets all at the same time. And if you go back and if you watch the movie and you see what the monolith is, it was put on a bunch of different planets, and it was a way for them to kind of watch how we progressed from caveman up to where we are now and et cetera. And it was kind of a way for them to see if we were worth going into space or not. It was a way for them to monitor us, dude.
Okay. I love that movie, and I did like the second one. Stanley Kubrick didn't have nothing to do with 2010. But what he did in 2001, Space Odyssey, was groundbreaking for special effects, man. And these in the all or nothing days where all the spaceships and everything were hand built. There was no CGI. There was no green screen or any of that. I mean,
just models, literally plastic models that they built.
I mean, but the what he did in this. I mean, I love today, man. You watch a science fiction film, and there's scenes when the spaceships are flying around. You hear the of them, and you see the fire or whatever coming out of the engine. And this, I loved his space scenes because there was no sound.
Yeah, he actually got the fact that there would be no sound in the vacuum of space.
Yeah, I mean, and it was awesome. I mean, just what he did there with his long shots and that, and the cinematography and the imagery of, like, what the hell is what the ending is it's still I'm still puzzled. I need to go watch this movie again, but I was just puzzled of what was going on with Dave when he basically looks like he went into the monolith, and I was like, what? And then this shows him when he's young, when he's old, and when he's a baby. And I was like, okay. Mm-hmm. I never read the book, so I was just kind of like, I was just blown away. Man, I love the movie. I get it each time, little pieces when I watch more and more of it. But that movie is awesome. I mean, Full Metal Jacket. I mean, I love the first half. And the second half, I mean, I love the whole movie, but I mean, the first half of the movie is the best.
The first half beat the hell out of the second half, I think, you know?
Yeah. And
second half kind of, you know, okay, they're over there. And you got a lot of sampling by Two Live Crew for sure from the second half, you know? Love you long time. you can't beat that first half, dude, with Sarge.
Yeah.
Just beating the shit out of him. And then he drove the one guy crazy, Kingpin, remember? Yeah,
he just blew his brains out. Or even in Eyes Wide Shut. I mean, I mean even that in the beginning, the beginning scene of Full Metal Jacket was all one shot, basically, because the cameras just right. the drill sergeant is following the camera or in front of the camera, and he just does this whole monologue in one take, and I'm like, man. I mean, there's times where they cut away, but the majority of that whole first scene was all one shot, and who knows how many times they did that.
A lot, dude, a lot. And you know what? Nobody really did that before Kubrick, if you think about it.
Yeah.
And now you've got a lot of really good directors who do single shots, and it's not the same, dude, as when Kubrick did it, man, because he would probably take 7 or 8 weeks worth of trying to film one shot before he said, okay, this is the one shot. And, you know, you got to respect that, man. I mean, he fucking pissed off the actors that were in his movies. They hated working for Kubrick because it was so grueling. But by the time they were done, he knew he had the shot that he wanted, you know?
He pushed the envelope on pretty much all of his films. I mean, even in Eyes Wide Shut with that one young actress, Lily Sobieski, I think that's her name.
Yes, and she was nobody at that time.
Yeah, and she was
Peter Stormare was her dad, remember?
Yeah, she was just a teenager in her underwear. Yep. And basically she was hooking with these Asian gentlemen. And I was like, whoa, what's going on in this movie? I think my favorite shot, and I mean, I love Eyes Wide Shut now. The first time I saw it,
yeah, I do too, like, man. First time I saw it, I hated it.
Yeah, I was kind
of just like most of Kubrick's films, I hate the first time I see them.
I was kind of like, huh, okay. But then watching it over and over again, I love it. But I mean, the scene that I love in that is when Tom Cruise is at the that mansion. And they basically tell, oh, yeah, just go walk around and see what's going on. The shot, it was a back and forth shot of Tom Cruise just walking through this mansion, going from room to room, and all this just orgy stuff is going on.
Oh, fucked up shit going on, huh?
And all these people sitting there with their black cloaks on and their masks watching. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, oh, my. I mean, other than what was going on in there, it's a beautiful shot, just awesome camera work. Of them following him, then the camera goes in front of him and he's walking. I was like, oh my god, I was just blown away with everything. But
you know the only director working today that kind of reminds me of Kubrick or got a lot from Kubrick is the Mexican director Alfonso Cuarón. He did Children of Men. Do you remember that one?
I saw it once. I really don't remember it.
Oh man, what a classic, dude! I mean, he followed a lot of the shot stuff that Kubrick started, and if you've seen Gravity, right?
Yeah,
Yeah, that's another of his movies. He's done a couple of Harry Potter movies and stuff like that. But I remember Children of Man and Gravity showing a lot of single shots where it's just like a perfect, absolutely nothing is wrong from left to right, from bottom to top of the screen. It's the exact shot he wants. And it's like, I think he got that from Kubrick, man. I mean, Kubrick's influence is strong, dude. There's a lot of people who still try to follow that. And very, 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 very few directors can pull that off. And I think Cuarón is one who can.
I'm going to have to go back and rewatch that movie because I seen it. I think when it came on HBO. But
You'll love it, dude. You got to check it out, man.
Going back to The Shining and you guys doing the show on it, did you watch that Room, was it?
247?
Yeah, or whatever.
Or 237 or whatever. Yeah, Room 237. Well, the room from the movie is different from the room number in the book, which is another thing. So they say that Kubrick basically gave a middle finger to Stephen King because a lot of the stuff Stephen King put in his book, Kubrick basically fucked. So he changes the room number, and then there was apparently in Stephen King's book, there was a red Volkswagen Beetle that they were driving to get there. But in Kubrick's, there's a blue Volkswagen Beetle that they're driving to get to the hotel. And toward the end of it, when you see Dick Halloran coming to try to save the boy and save everybody at the end, he drives over, he's driving and he can barely get through because there's a snowstorm, but he sees a red Volkswagen Beetle that's crushed by an 18-wheeler. And some people say that that's Kubrick giving the middle finger to Stephen King, saying, you know, fuck you and fuck your book because I'm making my own thing. And he was basically just saying, fuck all the norms and the tropes that were in the book. But I don't know, man. If you read the book and you see the movie, I was pissed, dude. I the first time I saw the movie, I was really fucking pissed. I was like, what does this asshole think he's doing? This is completely different from the book. For example, Dick Halloran, Scatman Crothers' character in the movie, at the end of the book, he lives, and he's like the main character that helps the wife and the child get out of there. And of course, you know, spoiler alert, if you see the Shining movie, he gets hit right in the heart with a big axe that Jack is swinging. So I don't know, man. It kind of does seem like there's some credence to that Kubrick was saying, I want to do my own thing and, you know, fuck you, Stephen King. Everything that you put in your book, I'm going to mess it up, you know?
I did read it. But way after I had seen the movie. I'd seen the movie first and loved it. I remember the first time I saw it, I was sitting at my house with my grandmother. And she was sitting there watching it with me. Had no idea there was going to be naked women and all craziness in it. But, I mean, I was just so like, oh, my God. I couldn't believe what was on the screen, and I loved it. Did you see the remake or the actual one that Stephen King endorsed, the one that the little miniseries? Was it a miniseries or was it just a one-shot movie that was on ABC?
I think there was a mini series. It was like two nights in a row, two-hour nights, and they actually showed like the for example, in the movie, well, in the book, when he went out into the maze, what do you call it, man? The maze that you run through, that the Minotaur was in back in Greek days. You know what I'm talking about.
I know what you're talking about, but I don't know. I have no idea what it's called.
I can't think of what it was called back in mythology times. But anyway, he was running through the maze in the book, and there were hedge animals like giraffes and elephants and bears and stuff like that. And in the book, they came to life, and they started chasing after the little boy. So when Danny was running through the maze in the book, he was being chased by, you know, hedge bears, hedge giraffes, hedge, you know, different types of animals and stuff like that. And they tried to recreate that in the miniseries, but obviously Kubrick didn't touch it. You know, he didn't have the animals in there. But, you know, I think the way Kubrick did it was just right with what he had to work with. And I'm not so sure if I would have enjoyed seeing, like, you know, hedge animals coming to life and stuff like that on a TV show. In a book, it kind of makes sense because your imagination gets to run wild. But I don't know. In a TV show, it probably looked really cheesy, man.
I saw it once. I really don't remember. But what I do remember is it went pretty much more with the book. And, I mean, I liked it for what it was. I mean, you got Rebecca De Mornay in it, and you can't go wrong there. But
I guess. Labyrinth. That's what I'm thinking of. It was called a labyrinth.
But with the movie, Kubrick's vision was, I mean, I love it. I mean, it's an amazing movie. It's nothing like the book, and there was a lot of shots at Stephen King in this movie. I actually went to the hotel. It's in Oregon, Timberline. I think it's like Timberline Lodge is what it's called. Yeah. It's way up in the mountains in Oregon, and I was in Portland. It's only like maybe an hour outside of Portland, so we were on our way home. And I love going to like movie locations, so we went to the actual hotel. It's nothing. They didn't film anything inside. It was all just outside shots of it and everything. So you go in there and you know what you see in the movie. That was all a big set that they built for the movie, but this hotel is huge, and you're not supposed to walk around in there, but I'm like, hey, man, when's the next time I'm going to be here? So I went through that whole hotel, and it doesn't look like anything of what the movie, and there's no big maze in the back or anything. But I mean, it was
none
cool
of that, huh?
It was cool just to be there, to see it, to say, hey, I was at the actual Shining Hotel from the Stanley Kubrick's movie.
Yeah, from what I understand, the inside scenes were all filmed in a studio in London, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I learned all that watching documentaries and everything. And Yeah, I mean, that movie's amazing. And I can't wait to hear what you guys talk about it. But if I'm going to give it your guys' rating, I'm giving it a 10 out of 10 because I love that movie.
Not bad, not bad.
I love it.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to talk about it this week, but I'll give The Shining an 8 out of 10.
All right.
And Clockwork Orange, dude, this is my first ever. You're hearing it first, folks. I've never done this before, and I'll probably never do it again. For me, Clockwork Orange is an absolute masterpiece. It is a 10 out of 10. The only 10 out of 10 I've ever seen in my life.
I can agree with you. 10 out of 10 for this movie. And it's a true masterpiece. And if you guys have not seen it, yeah, we spoiled the hell out of it. But go buy it. It's a buyer. Don't rent it. Even if you got to buy the download on iTunes or whatever, go buy this movie. This movie's awesome. It was, when it first came out, it was a rated X, but I don't know what they cut out of it to make it rated R. But from what I understand, my buddy,
probably nothing, dude. It's just a different time, man.
Yeah, my buddy said he saw it in San Francisco, and it was rated X, so he was expecting a little more gruesomeness, and he said, I couldn't tell you, it was like the same movie. So, yeah, like you said, it was different times. It was 71, and just what was going on the screen. Yeah, okay, we're gonna make it X, but I mean, this movie is amazing. I love it. This is a movie I can watch over and over and never get tired of it, no matter how many times I've seen this. So, but yeah, man, it's 10 out of 10. And hey, man, I just want to thank you for coming on. Yeah, we were supposed to do this a long time ago, but we finally did it. So
hell yeah, dude. It was really nice rewatching the movie, because even though I hadn't seen it in about 10 years, it was like scenes were coming on and I was just like moving my mouth with the words they were going to say next. I just knew exactly every fucking line of dialogue that was coming next, man.
Yeah.
Absolute classic and my favorite film of all time.
Yeah. Hey, once again, let my listeners know where they can hear your show.
Nah, we're just at horrorreturns.podbean.com, or just look us up on iTunes.
And Facebook, or join the Facebook group.
Yeah, join the group, man, so we can talk shit with each other.
So, hey,
all
man.
Right, so speaking of which.
Oh, go ahead.
before I hang up the phone here, the fuck problem do you have with Dane DeHaan, man?
I just don't like this kid. I mean, I liked him in Chronicle. He was good in that. But
yeah, because he was sinister.
Yeah, I just He was all right in that Metallica movie, Through the Never, but it was.
I've never seen that, man. What does he play? Like a fan that shows up at the concert or what?
No, he's a roadie. There's a wraparound story in it. They basically tell him, look, hey, we need. There was a van coming to the. They're in Canada, at some arena. Like, hey, there was a van coming with a bag that the band needs. And the van broke down. You need to go get it. So he's like, okay. So the concert's getting ready to start. The people are already pouring into the arena. He's on his way to this van a parking garage, and he gets the bag. And on his way back to the arena, all hell breaks loose. There's like a huge riot, and like the end of the world is going on outside, and Metallica has no idea what's going on. They're still going to put on their concert. And each song, they show bits and pieces of Dane DeHaan in his adventure, trying to go back to the arena.
I got to check that out, dude.
It was streaming on Netflix. I don't know if it is still, but yeah, I liked him in that because it was just little bits and pieces of it. But I don't know. I just didn't really care for him. I didn't like him as Green Goblin.
I didn't either, to be honest with you.
The Spider-Man one.
I didn't either. But I mean, dude, if he's in a Metallica video, dude, how can you hate him, man? You know what? I'm going to tell you what. No. Don't even get started, Kevin. I liked A Cure for Wellness.
I didn't.
I really did, man. I really fucking enjoyed the scene where he went with the girl into the bar, and there were all those weird characters in there just trying to kind of fuck with him. I don't know, dude. Something about that movie, it kind of hit me in the heart. But you know what? When I saw Valerian, Kevin, dude, it fucking blasted me in the heart. Whatever reason, and I think it was the first 5 minutes when they showed the scene where they were playing Space Oddity in the background. Mm-hmm. I'm just such a huge Star Trek fan, as you well know, and I'm just a huge believer in we're going to get off this goddamn planet and we're going to find other planets to explore. And that just hit me, man. I was literally crying, dude, in the first 5 minutes of that movie. And then when Dane DeHaan came on, I'm like, you know what? I'm loving this beginning so much, and I'm loving the way the movie's going. I'm not going to let the fact that this little shit's in it bother me. I'm just going to enjoy it. I'm going to sit back and ride, and I'm going to enjoy the movie. And all the characters they've had, all the great special effects, I didn't even see it in 3D. I think you did. Did you see it in 3D?
I didn't see it at all.
Oh, you fucking asshole.
Theo seen it. Dude, he talked about it.
For real, man. Me a favor. Do yourself a favor, Kevin. At least watch it before it leaves the theater, man. It is an absolute sight and sound masterpiece.
It's playing here in Susanville, but it's...
I do not love Dane DeHaan, but he's fine in it. You know what I mean? He's okay.
I don't know.
You got to get past it, brother. You got to get past it. How much does it cost to go see it? I'll mail you the check.
If I see it, man, everyone's saying that you have to see it in 3D because they're saying.
I agree, man. I got to go see it in 3D. I saw it in 2D and I was blown away, man. It's one of my top five movies of the year.
Is it going to be your favorite movie of the year?
You know what? I thought about that, and I've got to tell you, the writing and the storyline for Get Out is so much better. That's still the number one. And there's a couple. Have you seen The Devil's Candy?
Yeah.
Yeah. What'd you think?
I liked it for what it was.
I think it's in my top five, dude. The final scene with all the CGI fire was kind of cheesy. But the actual story and how they were feeding children to the devil and stuff like that was just like, wow. That's a fucking badass horror movie, man. I really enjoyed it.
I'm going to have to watch it again. I mean, you're selling it to me more. I think when I watched it, I was just tired, and I just kind of just sat through it. I mean, I liked it for what it was, but I think I was just tired. Maybe I need to watch it again.
Well, look, we're just in August, dude. What are your top five of the year?
It's not out yet, but I know it's going to be my number one, and that's The Last Jedi.
But you haven't seen it yet, man. It may suck.
It's Star Wars, and it's not going to suck.
I think it's going to be in my top five, dude, but I can't say for sure.
I'm telling you right now, it's going to be my number one. My number two so far is John Wick 2.
Yeah, that's probably either in my top five, or it's definitely a runner-up for sure.
I don't know after that. I mean,
what about Get Out?
It's
you didn't like it.
No, I loved it. I loved it. It's definitely in my top 10. When on East Society, okay, at the end of the year, we're going to do a top 10. We did it already once before, top 10 movies, and Rogue One was my number one, as well as Brian. I remember when you guys did it. Brian's was his favorite was his number one was Rogue One.
Was in my top five, dude.
My top 10 is pretty much full so far right now, but we still got we still got other movies coming out this year. And
yeah, we got a ways to go. Let me ask you this. What do you think about the classic? Are you ready for this? Drum roll, please. The Bye Bye Man.
Oh, that's if I'm doing a worst list, that's number one.
we always do a top five and a bottom five. And let me tell you something. Even though Bye Bye Man came out at the beginning of the year, there is no fucking way it's going to take the crown from my worst of the year, dude. So bad. Yeah, bad.
If you want my number one worst of the year, it's that. That movie was horrible.
Right. Well, we're in agreement on that, at least.
That movie. Oh my god! I just sit there watching it, going, "When is this over?"
All right, dude. Well, do me a favor, man. If you get a chance, will you try to go check out Valerian in the theater?
Yeah, I think I'm gonna see it, but I'm gonna. I definitely want to see it in 3D. Theo's been, come on, man, you gotta see it. You just gotta see it. I want to know what you think. I love Fifth Element. I love that movie. I didn't really care for Lucy.
Yeah, but
Professional was awesome. But yeah, we'll see. I'll definitely see it. If anything, I'm gonna see it in 3D. But before we start rambling on about other things, because again, dude, thank you so much for coming on the show. You're always welcome. The door's always open for you. We don't have to talk about movies. You can come on in and we can just blab about anything. But hey, everyone, do check out The Horror Returns, man. They're amazing guys. They're awesome. Can't wait to hook up with you guys again and go to whatever. Or maybe just come down and hang out and everything. But everyone, thank you so much for listening. Big thanks to everybody that checked out my last episode. My rad commentary, and I'm looking at those download numbers, and wow, thank you so much. Didn't really think anyone wanted to hear me blab about an old movie that I love, but
but it's a skateboard movie, man.
It was a BMX movie.
Okay.
That's coming later on. I'm going to get my buddy. We're going to talk about this movie called Thrash, and that's a skateboarding movie.
There you go.
But, again, thank you so much. And everyone, thank you so much for tuning in. And like I said, check out The Horror Returns. And that's going to be it. You got anything else for the listeners?
No, man. Just thanks again, dude, for inviting me, man.
Right on, man. You're always welcome. But hey, everybody, man, thank you so much for listening. Damn dog, she's outside trying to scratch on the window, trying to get in. But anyway, thank you guys so much for listening to the show, as well as my E-Society and the new show that Big Jesse and I did, Big Guys Podcast. Do check that show out. And that's going to be it for this episode. Who knows when I'll come back with another show. E-Society, that's going to be out in a few more days after the weekend and everything. And yeah, that's it. And I can't wait to listen to your guys' next episode when you talk about The Shining and The Dark Tower. We will definitely be talking about Dark Tower on East Society. And that's going to be it. Hey, everybody. Like I always say, man, just move forward. Rock hard and skate fast. Get out of the goddamn road! Almighty in front of me!
take your daddy's car and drive it off a cliff. You like it, don't you, bitch? So drive and see if you're